We once again welcome Senior Judge Royce Lambreth of the Federal District Court of the District of Columbia to the court and filling in for our vacant position, which we hope will be remedied soon. We had some problems with our sound system yesterday, and what happened was that we occasionally would get static from that system, and they've made some adjustments, but we're not sure whether or not we've resolved the problem. So if the problem reoccurs, we're just going to turn off the sound system, and we have a digital recorder up here, which I understand is very sensitive, that will then record all of the proceedings, which will then later be placed on our website. So if we run into that problem, we may have to interrupt the proceedings to turn off our system. Today we have the United States versus Labella. It is a motion to dismiss under Rule 40B2. The moving party in a motion to dismiss argues first. So in this case, that is the government. So the government will go first. Are you prepared? Ready to go? Okay.
Good morning. May it please the court. I'm Roger Bruce. Colonel Oler and I have the privilege of representing the United States in this case. The United States respectfully asserts that this court has no statutory jurisdiction to consider appellant's untimely petition for review, and on that basis, it should be denied. But the court should do more than summarily deny the petition, because the court should correct the Air Force Court's erroneous view of jurisdiction that makes clear a couple of things. One, the Air Force Court had no legal authority to grant appellant's untimely reconsideration motion. And two, the Air Force Court had no legal authority to expand this court's statutory jurisdiction. But first, our position is quite straightforward. This court has no statutory authority to grant the petition for review because it is untimely under Article 67B, as reinforced in Article 71 and as confirmed in Rodriguez. The procedural framework for this case proves the legal error committed by the Air Force Court that has brought us here today.
Well, whether they erred or not is a question of their own rules, isn't it?
It is, Your Honor.
Right, but what we do with what they did is the question, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
We don't have to tell them you can never grant out-of-time reconsiderations in order to decide this case, do we?
I suppose not.
We can simply say whatever you did has no effect or this effect on our jurisdiction under 67.
I would agree with that, Your Honor.
Okay.
But, Your Honor, a legal error was committed by the lower court that brought us here today. Our first position is exactly as you are indicating, and that is simply that this court has no statutory authority to grant the untimely petition.
Well, counsel, the question is really, I mean, it's timely on its face, right? On its face, it came to us within 60 days of when they entered their final order. So the problem is not with us. It's whether they could do what they did under some other statute. In other words, can they give an extension so that they're effectively acting on a case that would be final because it's past the period of time when it could have come here?
Yes, Your Honor. You have to peel back the onion to get to the point where we are today. And that onion is what the Air Force Court did that frankly was without any legal authority. And that's established well in the procedural posture of the case. He was convicted 5 years ago for child pornography, received a sentence that subjected his case to Article 66 jurisdiction. The Air Force Court, after a lengthy appellate process, affirmed his case for the last time on 2 July 2014. Their decision was served on the appellant 5 days later on 7 July 2014. To meet this court's statutory 60-day deadline, the appellant had to file a petition with this court no later than 5 September 2014. He didn't meet that deadline to file a petition with this court, so direct appellate review, and that's a very important concept, direct appellate review under Article 71 was complete on 6 September 2014.
Well, what about Smith? What about the holding in Smith?
Yes, Your Honor. Smith, in our view, fully supports the position that we're taking here today. Because in Smith, unlike this appellant, he actually filed a timely motion for reconsideration by the Court of Criminal Appeals. There was no untimely motion there. And then, once that lower court issued their decision on the reconsideration motion, he filed a timely petition before this court, which was perfectly permissible under Article 66 and 67. There was nothing wrong with what happened in Smith, but those predicate facts are simply missing from this appellant's case.
Because in Smith it wasn't yet final?
Correct.
Because the time had not run for the petition for rehearing.
Exactly. It ran from the date the lower court issued their final decision on the reconsideration request. Yes, Your Honor.
Is it your view that the CCA can never grant an untimely motion for reconsideration, or is it your position that they can never grant one that will put them once our 60-day period has lapsed?
It's the second scenario, Your Honor.
That's the specific problem in this case.
Exactly.
If they granted an untimely motion for reconsideration, it's they did it after the case was effectively final under Article 70.
That's exactly right, Your Honor. That's exactly what happened.
Is that what CCA Joint Rule 19D is trying to say? What does that language mean?
Yes, Your Honor. The lower court rules really speak to two time periods for filing reconsideration. The first one says that an appellant has 30 days to file a recon request. But that's not the rule that we need to care about here. It's 19D that says under no circumstances can the lower court grant untimely reconsideration past the time for filing a petition before this court. And that's exactly what the lower court did. They failed to follow their own rule and therefore had no legal authority and therefore exceeded their own Article 66 jurisdiction.
If it wasn't for Article 71, right, who cares if they don't, it's not our concern if they don't follow their own rules. That's not a jurisdiction.
I would agree, Your Honor. You have to read, really you have to consider 66, 67, 71, and Rodriguez together to reach the conclusion that the Air Force Court had no authority to do what they did and that we respectfully assert depriving this court of jurisdiction to grant the petition in the first place. Those are the dispositive facts that require dismissal of this petition for lack of jurisdiction. Again, based on the clear language of Rodriguez, the accurately described legislative history in the Rodriguez opinion and Article 71, this court simply lacks jurisdiction to grant the petition. But I'd like to talk a little bit more specific, if I may, about what the Air Force Court did. They had no lawful authority to do what they did for three reasons at least. First and foremost, in our view, is direct appellate review was complete under Article 71. So therefore, they exceeded their Article 66 authority. And as this court has previously noted, an appellate court has to assure itself of jurisdiction before it does anything. It can't simply presume that they have jurisdiction, which was the very word they used in their decision here. They presumed they had jurisdiction rather than specifically making a determination that they had it. It's not like a substantive legal error where sometimes you can assume error but then jump straight to prejudice to find that there was no harm. You can't do that with jurisdiction. The court either had it or they didn't, and in this case they did not. The decision, their decision was final on 6 September 2014 under Article 71, and at that point they no longer had legal authority to continue the direct appeal that they attempted to do by their granting of the motion. The appellant's only legally authorized option at that point was to pursue collateral review by filing a petition for extraordinary relief with the Air Force Court, which is exactly the conclusion that this court drew in the Thomas case very recently. In fact, that is still the appellant's only option today. The United States is not attempting to close the courtroom door to this appellant. The United States is merely attempting to usher him to the correct court with the correct pleading, and that simply has not occurred in this case because of what the Air Force Court did. Next, the Air Force Court, as I mentioned, clearly exceeded their own rules. Unlike the companion case of Thomas that we cited in our brief, instead of filing a petition for review at this court, the appellant filed the untimely motion for reconsideration with the Air Force Court on 3 December 2014, which was well beyond the 60-day period that 19D would have permitted. And again, under their own rules, it's clear under no circumstances could they do what they did. Their order was, in fact, a legal nullity that cannot withstand scrutiny. If we take their position to its logical extreme, there really would be no finality, no termination point for the Air Force Court to grant untimely consideration. They could grant it 3 months late, 6 months late, a year, a decade. It simply would not matter if you follow their view to its logical and unlawful conclusion. Article 66, 67, 71, and Rodriguez do not permit this result. And finally, they have no authority to grant, or rather to extend this court's statutory authority, as clearly reflected in both Rodriguez and, again, as we argue, the Smith case. We specifically cited Rodriguez to the Air Force Court when appellant filed his untimely motion for reconsideration. We brought it to the lower court's attention, and yet that case never made its way into the court's decision. It appears they simply did not consider it when reaching their erroneous decision. Rodriguez and their own court rules compelled the Air Force Court to deny it. Rodriguez is good law, and the Air Force Court had a duty to apply it. And as I mentioned, Smith fully supports our position as well. I'd also like to mention the Daly case cited in our brief. In Daly, although it was a government appeal under Article 62, this court held that an untimely motion for reconsideration could not extend the military court's statutory authority to hear the appeal in that case, which is exactly the same result here. An untimely motion for reconsideration cannot extend a military appellate court's statutory authority to hear a case. Also, as noted in our brief, this court has consistently applied Rodriguez since it came out.
No, I mean, counsel, do we even have to get into that? I mean, you've been talking about our authority. I mean, the real question is whether what they did had any legal effect or whether it was ultra vires, right?
I agree, Your Honor.
Right? I mean, that's sort of, because the answer is either yes, what they did was okay, right, in which case it was filed within 60 days and our jurisdiction is not at issue, or what they did is not okay, in which case this court's jurisdiction is not at issue. Rodriguez is not at issue.
I totally agree with you, Your Honor. I only mentioned it because my opponent has
been
agreed.
Want to make the simple complex?
No, Your Honor. No, I hope not. I hope not, Your Honor. I only mentioned it because my opponent in her brief suggested that Rodriguez should be overruled, and we take a great exception to that. Rodriguez is good law. This court has consistently applied it, and for 7 years in Congress has not seen fit to change it. Rodriguez should not be disturbed. There's no ambiguity in the statute. File within 60 days or it's done. Even if there was ambiguity, this court correctly analyzed the legislative history and found Congress specifically intended this result. The deadline is jurisdictional and mandatory, and the Air Force Court simply should have realized it. If there are no further questions.
I have a question. You mentioned that appellant here should have filed a petition for extraordinary relief.
Yes, Your Honor.
And you cite that fact for the government not seeking to close the courthouse doors.
Yes, Your Honor.
So is it the government's position then that a petition for extraordinary relief would have been meritorious?
No, Your Honor. We're not taking that position here today.
So how is the courthouse door not closed then if you're
just
taking the position that excuse me,
sorry,
I'm still
Your Honor,
speaking.
I apologize.
If you're taking the position that it would not have been meritorious?
Your Honor, just as he has the burden here today to establish jurisdiction, and he cannot, he will have the burden to establish relief under the legal principles of a petition for extraordinary relief. We're not here to litigate those separate and inapplicable legal principles. We're just saying that's where he needs to go, and that is an argument that should be saved for another day.
So you're not saying that actually the courthouse door is necessarily open?
He can get in the door, and then we can have a contest about whether he is entitled to relief, Your Honor. That is the position that we are taking. Does that answer Your Honor's question?
Yes.
Thank you.
I have a question.
Yes,
what's the government's position on that last phrase in Rule 19D, except that the time for filing briefs by either party may be extended for good cause? And there's some dispute over what that good cause means and what it's applied to.
Yes, Your Honor. I'm glad you asked that question. I would compare that to this court's statutory authority to accept a petition for review within the 60-day deadline. That's mandatory. That's jurisdictional. There are no exceptions to that. However, an appellant can file a petition but then later file their brief after the 60-day deadline has expired.
So the good cause doesn't apply at all to the deadline?
No, Your Honor. It's to file the motion, and if an appellant wanted additional time to file a brief in support of a timely filed motion for reconsideration, then it would be permissible to grant additional time to submit the brief. But if you don't file the motion, you've lost that opportunity, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions from the court? And I'll reserve my remaining time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Court will now hear from the appellant.
Chief Judge Erdman, members of the court, and may it please the court, I'm Major Jare Williams, and I represent the appellant, Airman First Class Sebastian Labella. This court does have the jurisdiction to grant appellant's petition for two primary reasons. First, the Air Force Court properly used its discretion to allow appellant's untimely filing of his petition for reconsideration. And second, the Air Force Court's grant did extend the period of time within which the appellant could petition this court for review in accordance with Article 67B. The Air Force Court properly uses discretion because Article 66 and its court rules permitted them to do so, and because this case was not, in fact, complete in the way that the government argues. If moving your attention to in the joint appendix, page 28 and 31, just to talk a little bit of the background of how we got here, appellant originally requested to the Air Force Court that the Air Force Court suspend Rule 19 in accordance with their Court Rule 25 for good cause. The Air Force Court then determined that it would permit appellant to file his reconsideration motion pursuant to Rule 19D, finding that the good cause that we argued was there and that there was good cause to do so. In their order, they specifically mention that Article 66 does not provide a time limitation on petitions for reconsideration, only that they shall be determined in accordance with the Courts of Criminal Appeals rules of procedure as promulgated by the Judge Advocate Generals. Now, Rule 19D, as mentioned by Chief Judge Erdman and counsel in this last question, it does expressly provide that the time for filing briefs may be extended for good cause. Now, government, of course, makes the argument that this provision only applies to briefs filed in support of a motion for reconsideration, but the Air Force Court and at least one other court of criminal appeals, that's the Navy Court of Military Review back in 1977, they have not so literally construed this provision. The case that I'm referring to, I will provide in a supplemental filing to the court. It's U.S. v. Brandt, 3MJ959. And that's just one case that counsel was able to find to show that that rule has been construed to include requests to file untimely motions.
Well, whatever they do with their own rules, either now or in the 1970s, if we don't overrule Rodriguez, do you lose?
I'm sorry, sir. I'm sorry, Judge Duke. I didn't hear the last part of
your question. If we don't overrule Rodriguez, do you lose?
No, Your Honor, we don't.
Why don't you lose? What effect can their tinkering or ignoring, as the government argues, their own rules have on our statutory jurisdiction?
What it does, Your Honor, is their rule. They're operating off of Rule 66, and although in their order they did not mention Rodriguez, they did mention the Russell decision, the Russell decision, Your Honor. And what they said is that they're not constrained as far as time goes and them doing what they do. And essentially what they did is by granting that and by deciding, albeit against the appellant, that they recreated this decision that the Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces, this court, can now review pursuant to Article 67.
No, what they do with their rules, they may not be constrained or they might not consider themselves to be constrained, but how does that affect whether we are constrained by statute under Rodriguez? You haven't answered my question.
Yes, sorry, Judge Stuckey, and you're not constrained by what they do. What they essentially have done is actually extended the period of time and actually allowed the courtroom doors of this court to open up again.
How can they open our doors by disregarding their own rules?
Well, pursuant to Article 67B, which...
Counsel, what do you do about Article 71? I mean, by operation of statute, right, once the 60-day time period has elapsed from the time that they make a decision, whether they file any papers to that effect or not, if nothing is received by this court by day 60, the case is final.
Yes. We would respectfully disagree with that, Judge Ryan. In finishing Judge Stuckey's question, Article 67B authorizes you to review this case because there is now a decision that is in your lap, if so to speak, that the Air Force Court, by virtue of their action, have.
In other words, they, by their own action, can extend our jurisdiction beyond what we said it constituted in Rodriguez.
In this case, that's what exactly.
That's what you're arguing.
Yes, Judge Stuckey.
Thank you.
Judge Ryan, we would argue that that the case, in the way that the government is arguing, it was not complete under Article 71.
Well,
and we would cite your...
Well, just look at the statutory language. I mean, it says, a judgment as to legality of the proceedings is final in such cases when review is completed by the Court of Criminal Appeals and... A, the time for the accused to file a petition for review by the Court of Appeals has expired, right, which is 60 days.
Yes, and
so what's ambiguous about that language?
It's not ambiguous, but we would offer that Loving versus the U.S., which is 62 MJ 235, cited in the government's brief. It really discusses the interplay between Article 71 and Article 76. And what does Article 71 mean in relation to Article 76? And we would argue that Article 71...
And that was in a death penalty case, right?
It was. And it was also a collateral review case, which is also different from this direct review case. So the facts are different.
And the president hadn't acted in that case.
That's correct. And in this regard, there was no action as well.
But in this regard, no action is required.
Well, in this regard, the sentence became ripe for execution, and so there was, I mean, not in the literal sense of execution, but for the sentence to be acted upon, and there for the sentence that was the punitive discharge, and that had not occurred. And so that's still, that part of Article 71 still applies to any sentence that needs to be acted upon. And so the Loving Court talked about the interplay between Article 71 and 76, and essentially said that Article 71 just simply says that the sentence is ripe for execution. Article 76 is actually the terminal point for proceedings within a court-martial. And so there's a period of time where the case, yes, the time has run out. The case is final as to the legality, so that means that they're able to go ahead and execute the sentence. But in this regard, by that not occurring, the Air Force Court was able to sort of reach back and touch the case and bring it back.
I understand that that's your position, right? That's your position, but if we disagree with your position, then what they did was without legal authority. I mean, they acted on a case that they no longer had authority to act on because it was final.
That is correct, Judge Ryan. But in moving back to... And moving back to my argument about the Article 66, we would argue that what they did was okay, and it was legal, and they were authorized to do so. I think what it really boils down to is, does it authorize this court or to be able to accept this petition as a timely filed petition in accordance with the new period of time that... that we're arguing occurred by their actions. It certainly is a rare case. It's a case that kind of is just hanging out there. We would argue that this likely won't happen too much often because the circumstances surrounding it likely won't happen too much often. But it's not new that timely motions for reconsideration extend a statutory period. And of course, that's what U.S. v. Smith said in that decision.
Well, I think that the government concedes that so long as they were asked to consider an untimely motion for reconsideration within the 60-day period, right, before the 60-day period elapsed, that that would have been fine. The problem is that it happened after the 60 days.
And that is the issue that we are arguing before you. We would agree that this case does turn on that. Earlier, you had asked counsel that the real question is did what the Air Force Court do have any legal effect? And that is what it boils down to, because if they did have legal effect, then this court should be able to grant this petition, should it choose to do so. But if what they did not have legal effect, then that would prevent
this
court from
doing that. Well, I still don't understand the link between whatever you say their 66 power is and our power under 67 as interpreted by Rodriguez. What you're saying is basically Rodriguez-Schmadriguez. They did something and that's enough.
Just to see if I'm understanding the connection that you're trying to make, is it that so long as what they did was with authority, R67 jurisdiction is just fine because it will be within 60 days?
Yes, Judge.
So it has nothing to do with Rodriguez?
Yes, Judge Ryan.
I'm just trying to make sure that I'm understanding the two sides of the argument.
Yes, Judge Ryan, that's the argument that we're making. Another point that I want to make, Judge Stuckey, to your question is that even if AFSCEA did not grant appellant's request to file the motion in accordance with Rule 19D, it certainly would have been able to do so in accordance with appellant's original request that it suspend Rule 19 pursuant to Rule 25.
They never acted on that, did they?
They did not. They chose to. They felt that they had the authority to do
it. They would still, I mean, that may be an alternative road, but they'd have to grant the motion. And that's suppositious itself, isn't it?
Well, they would have to grant the motion, but the appellant's argument is that they had two ways, if you will, in order to grant the motion.
Mm-hmm.
That second way that I was mentioning is the pursuant to their Rule 25, where the TJAGs, exercising authority delegated from Congress, authorized them to suspend the rules. And this would include Rule 19 in its reconsideration time period on the face of that Rule 25.
So what you're arguing is that under their own rules, under 25, they have the authority to suspend their own rules.
Yes.
And they could have suspended it and taken this.
That's what I'm arguing.
Right. And therefore, what they did was with authority, and therefore, we should take it.
Therefore, that 60-day period reset.
Therefore, it's tolled.
Yes, it's tolled, and this court should take it pursuant to Article 67B.
Counsel, do you agree with the government that Rule 19D, the time limitations there, essentially reflects the concerns, reflects Article 71, or do you disagree with that?
I would agree that Rule 19D, their concern with I'm sorry, Judge Ryan, I would agree with that to a certain extent. In going and looking at Rule 19D, the original Rule 19D came about in 1969, and it's very similar to the rule today with minor language. And the concern even then came from the U.S. v. Sparks case that was back in 1955, and the fact that the court had to grapple with a way to make a terminus for litigation, as they call it, a point where they can just end the litigation. And so the court crafted a rule but invited the judge advocate generals to use their powers to promulgate some joint rules to answer this question. Here we have in 1969 this Rule 19, and what they did do at that point is at that point Article 71 and Article 76, which was enacted in 1956, was also in existence. So looking at this court's power under Article 67B, and yes, with the concern of ending a case, 19D was drafted with all of those statutes in mind. One thing that was mentioned was whether Chief Judge Erdman had asked a question about the good cause language. Does it apply in this case. In kind of building a little bit more on my argument that the Air Force Court could have gone two separate ways to act, both ways calls for there to be good cause. The court did find that there was good cause, and they did have the authority to do so pursuant to Rule 19D and pursuant to Rule 25 if they would have suspended the rule.
Well, so, but well, there's two problems there. Number one.
Excuse me.
Yeah, go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you.
Number one, maybe they could have suspended the rules, but they didn't. They did something else. And number two, doesn't 19D just apply to brief filing? It says so. It says you can file a brief. They can extend the time to file a brief for good cause. That's a brief, not a petition. But even if they got the authority to suspend the rules under 25, they didn't do it.
Yes, and as I tried to make, maybe I didn't do such a great job of making the point earlier, is that the way that the courts of criminal appeals seem to interpret that is not just to file briefs, extensions of time to file briefs, but they have used that rule to extend the time to file a simple request to file the motion out of time. And that's what I had tried to mention earlier, that yes, the rule does say that. That's not how they've been. They have not literally construed the rule in that way as far back as
19. Well, it's not binding on us. Of course, it's also an interpretation of their rules. This is kind of like the Supreme Court taking a case from a state Supreme Court. They're the experts on questions of state law, and we don't get into that. But we're the experts on our own jurisdiction, so.
Yes, and I would agree with that, Judge Dookie. So, essentially, because AFSCEA granted the request to file the motion and rendered an actual decision on the motion, the 60-day statutory period in front of this court, it began anew. Much like this court can revive a final decision by its grant of reconsideration beyond a period established by its rules, appellant would respectfully argue that so can a CCA's within reason do that as well. The appellant has made an alternative argument that we would request the court to reexamine U.S. v. Rodriguez. We will not argue that ad nauseum in front of the court, but we would just ask that the court consider all of the filings that we've made as far as this is concerned and the amicus brief that was filed as well. Subject to any of the court's questions.
I have one more question. You said within reason. What about the government's slippery, it's not quite a slippery slope argument, but it's a reductio ad absurdum argument, which is, well, what if they do it in 5 years?
I don't, and that's fair enough, Judge Dookie. I believe that with the interplay between Article 71 and Article 76, that had Article 71, had the sentence been executed, appellant believes that the Air Force Court would not have been able to do this. So there is an end in sight to this, and there is no slippery slope, and we don't see this being such a common occurrence in the first place. This is just one of those rare cases where they were able to do so.
But doesn't it at least create some uncertainty where there is no uncertainty now that an appellant and a CCA can essentially reset the time limit for this court to entertain a petition?
Respectfully, Chief Judge Erman, no, it does not, because the certainty lies in where the case is. It's easy to find out, has the sentence been executed? Has Article 71 actually been triggered? Has Article 76 been triggered? And so there should be no uncertainty.
And do you agree with the government's position that your client has the opportunity to file a petition for extraordinary relief at the CCA?
Absolutely, Chief Judge Erman, but he first must exhaust all of his other options before doing so. Thank you.
Rebuttal?
Thank you. Just a couple of quick, brief points. I would like to speak more specifically about Rule 19D, because it, on its face, says they cannot suspend under Article 25 beyond the time for filing before this court. They had no good cause authority on the face of their own rule that they never cited to and never considered in their decision. Without that authority to suspend, there was no legal authority for their action. Article 19D really does implement, Rule 19D of the Air Force Court really does implement the provisions of Article 71 and the finality contained therein. The Air Force Court never cited to Rule 19D. They never cited to or considered Article 71, and in failing to do so, committed their error. Article 71 is crystal clear on its face. The Air Force Court judgment was final when the court issued its decision and those 60 days expired. It was a final judgment. Direct appellate review was complete. Appellant argues before this court that the Air Force Court can extend this court's jurisdiction, and we fully and respectfully disagree with that contention. This court and the Air Force Court is a court of limited jurisdiction, as this court knows. Congress set very narrow limits from which the Air Force Court can act, and they exceeded their authority here and sought to extend your authority. Finally, the appellant can't get past Rule 19D, can't get past Article 67, can't get past Article 71, and cannot get past Rodriguez. This court would have to essentially ignore all those legal principles in order for the appellant to prevail. Unless there are any further questions, may I briefly conclude?
You do.
Thank you, Your Honor. The appellant has a remedy, and that is to seek that petition for extraordinary relief at the Air Force Court. His direct appeal lapsed. It expired, as Congress had intended to occur under these circumstances. It cannot be continued. Those seeking to amend Article 66, 67, 71 must present that petition to Congress, not to this court. Appellant has failed to meet his burden to establish jurisdiction. The court should grant the United States motion, but should also clarify so that the Air Force will not make its legal error yet again. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. The matter is now submitted. The court will be in recess until further order of the court.